On today's College Football Inquirer, how do player buyouts work in college football? We know how coach buyouts work. We got a bunch of player buyouts being paid now, including one that just got negotiated in court for quarterback Darian Mensah, who is headed from Duke to Miami. Ross Dellinger will explain how it all works, or at least how it's all supposed to work. Plus, is life just better in the NFL? We've seen a bunch of new NFL head coaches, and they are names that should be familiar to lots of college football fans. Some of them are people who ran screaming from college football. Some of the people who got swept out by the NCAA, but they are now coaching at the highest level of football and probably much happier than if they were still in college. Let's talk about the quality of life difference between college and the NFL, and what does that mean for college football going forward? Also, Bill Belichick didn't make the Hall of Fame. Did watching him be fallible for a year at North Carolina cause 11 or more people to think they could leave Bill Belichick off their Hall of Fame ballot? We'll talk about it all on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger, and he's back, Stephen Godfrey. Welcome back.
Ooh, all right.
We rejoined the 21st century. I have electrical power.
Well, you were supposed to be out last Thursday. This was a planned vacation. Yes. Last Thursday.
Yes.
Your absence Tuesday was because your hometown of Nashville turned into the ice planet Hoth.
Yes,
and
it did.
There was no power.
Yes. Shout out. You know what? I'm always surprised the professions of individuals who listen to our programming. If you're a lineman, salute.
Oh, we love you.
Wichita lineman. Oh, yeah. Everybody, like, you know that classic song. If you work in an electrical company, I have nothing but admiration for you. Yeah, we were without power in my home. I have three kids. I also have a wife for 3 days and a couple hours. And here in Nashville, it was in the single digits. It got down sub 5 degrees. So, yeah, at one point we were sleeping in a house that was 41 degrees and we were the lucky ones. So, yeah, I'm back. I apologize for my absence. There's still a lot of people without power across the Southeast. So if you're listening to this in a weird way or watching it on your phone and you can see your breath, I've been there. Hang on. The only thing we can provide is a little bit of a college football patter for an hour. So
yeah, yahoosports.tv if you want to watch it on your phone, your tablet, your laptop. Hopefully you have some charge. But hopefully, yeah, we can provide a little escape from the cold and the dark.
Yeah.
And, you know, just feeling for everybody who's been affected by that. There's another round of those coming this weekend.
Yeah.
So, Southeast, get ready. But, gentlemen, we got to talk about a story that our friend Ross Dellinger has posted at On3 about buyouts. And I've been getting a lot of questions about this, so I'm glad we're talking about this because this is something that I think the average fan is definitely confused about because athletic directors and administrators are also somewhat confused about this because still not sure how everything works. Ross, can you tell us how it's supposed to work?
Yeah, it's supposed to work in that once a school A acquires a player who's under contract from school B, school A will obviously pay the buyout, and then in the CAPS management system where you input your rev share, the new system that the College Sports Commission controls, when you put your rev share contracts and you input them into a database, you're supposed to input the buyout that you paid if you paid a buyout for a player. And that's how they keep track of it through the cap system. And then the third part of this is that buyout amount gets reduced from your rev share pool next year. So if you paid $100,000in a buyout for one player, then that $100,000 you pay that school $100,000, and $100,000 is reduced from your buyout next year. That school doesn't get to reduce or increase their cap by $100,000. They just keep the cash.
Well,
is how
question from the class. So let's use Darian Mensah as an example, since he's the one we've been talking about. This is actually a settlement. It wasn't a contractual buyout. They did agree on a settlement. So I don't know if that changes the math, but theoretically this is the same thing. And so let's say they said we'll take $1.5 million to buy him out, and we don't know the exact amount. Two private schools, private individual. So we may never find out the exact amount, but we're just hypothetically, let's say it's $1.5 million. So what you're saying is that doesn't come off Miami's 2026 total. where Darian Mintz is going to play in 2026, it's going to come off their 2027 total.
Well, it's actually, it according to the house like rules, it's whenever you get paid the buyout by the school. But the Mensa, yeah, so you could get paid it whenever that happens, and it's supposed to happen quickly, but but usually it's going to be the following year, you know. I mean, like if they, well, first of all, the Mensa situation is very confusing.
This is going to get real good pod, but is this going to be fiscal year or calendar year?
You know, it's cap year, which the cap year is the
fiscal year. Oh, so it'll be 26-27. So it'll, yeah, it will be the season that Darian Mensa plays for Miami. Well, that's what I was trying to figure out.
Yes, it's supposed to. But the Miami Mensa situation is very different. And it provides sort of a loophole in this rule. Because it was the financial settlement was in the confines of a lawsuit between Mensa and Duke, not Miami. But the question obviously arises is, where is Mensa getting the money to pay Duke the financial settlement?
To which is he it, can probably know? Say none of your business, CSC.
Right. He could say that. Yeah. If there's some paper trail that he's getting the money from Miami in some way through revenue share or whatever, there's a possibility they could tie it back, but this is definitely a loophole where you don't, Miami, and I've talked to people down there, they don't feel like they're going to count whatever amount is, $2-3 million.
Is this a loophole or is this just how it works? Because I know how coaching buyouts work, and the coach, the human, the individual, the sole proprietor or their LLC, they are the one responsible for paying the buyout. Now, almost always the school hiring that coach gives the coach the money to pay it.
Yes.
Right. But that's not always true. I asked my friends in the agent world, how do you do this? And they have several different methods of doing it. One way is called a gross up, and the reason they do this is because for tax purposes. And this is one reason I think Damon Williams didn't leave Washington is you get taxed on all of the money you get. So if you happen to be paying a large amount, like Damon Williams probably would have had to pay $4 million to Washington, you're taxed on that $4 million as income, even though you didn't take it home. You were just the pass-through.
Right.
So it becomes a big problem. Like you wouldn't even make as much money at LSU as you would have made at Washington because of that. So what coaches do when they get in the situation, because let's say you hired a coach who has a $5 million buyout and you're paying him $5 million in salary. Well, for that tax year, you're paying him $10 million.
Right.
He's getting taxed on $10 million, which is $3.9 million at that tax bracket. And he's only taking home $5 million.
Yeah.
So he's only netting $1.1 million. That's enough math for the show. But they do a couple different things. They'll do what's called a gross up, which means they just pay you more until you are basically made whole with the tax taken off. Or the schools will actually buy the coach's contract from the old school, which allows them to not have to pay it to the coach as income. It is just then a business expense for the school.
So now I'm trying to figure out how, of course, to cheat this. How do we get around this? Because that's what schools are doing anyway. Yep. And that's like the
enforcement. You can settle a lawsuit.
Well, the magnitude of this is going to be measured by how inflexible it actually is. If it's something we're going to observe and worry about and measure the numbers, is going to be, hey, can I just find a way around either the initial buyout situation, or what's more interesting to me for a second is, like, if I'm paying sort of a tax later, or my number is lessened for this, could you not make that up in outside payments from NIL, Ross?
Yeah, you could. That's another way around it. Yeah, that's exactly. There could be, and so there's three ways that this settlement gets paid. One is Mensa just saving a lot of money, $2-3 million, and he's just going to pay it himself. Two is what Andy said. It's a gross up.
Yeah, a gross you pay up. More. Yeah,
right. And I called it in my story about this today, an overcompensating rev share payment from Miami. Now that avenue, if the CSC digs in and accuses Miami of basically increasing the rev share payment in order to for him to make the buyout. I mean, there could be some kind of argument there. And of course, the third way is what Godfrey said, which is just like some car dealership in Miami, right?
Yep.
Cuts him some $2 million check. Of course, that has to go conceivably, presumably through NIL Go, the clearinghouse, and get cleared. Yeah. So those are kind of like the three ways that this sort of can happen. But none in none of the ways really, except maybe number two, the gross, the gross up in the rev share would put Miami on the hook to reduce their rev share pool. Of course, none of this might matter if there's not going to be any enforcement of the rev share pool and the exceeding of the cap anyway.
Can I
That's what I was going to point out. This Miami is run by Dan Radakovich, the athletic director who publicly a few weeks ago said, why don't we just do this thing on cap? Because you can't enforce it anyway.
I want to throw something out here that has never occurred to me in the college sports space. But like on my other show, Phantom Island, we talk about other sports. And this has come up, especially with actually the NHL. Stay with me. So when you're in free agency in the NHL and you are a sought after player, chances are you're from somewhere like Ontario. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. In Canada.
Yep.
And hypothetically, if you're looking to get that sort of generational wealth free agent contract, even though you're from Ontario, where they care more about hockey, and that's where that's the sport everyone lives and dies with, and maybe you grew up a Maple Leafs fan, you know, more often than not, boys, those guys, they don't end up signing with like the Maple Leafs or the Canadiens. They end up signing with the Tampa Bay Lightning,
Florida Panthers,
the Nashville Predators, and the Dallas Stars. Now, what do those states that house those teams have in common, boys?
They have no income tax. Woo.
There are eight states in the United States that don't have an income tax. Now, they're not all the same, but the big three that we talk a lot about in when it comes to athlete free agency are Tennessee, Texas, and Florida because they house pro teams. There are other states like New Hampshire, South Dakota, Alaska, Wyoming. Obviously, they lack for pro teams, so it's never come up. Now, college sports is a little bit different. Ironically, the state of Washington, where Williams is at, does not have an income tax, technically. But they have a much higher tax on capital gains for high earners, which Mr. Williams would now find himself in. I would like to propose to the class, is this going to become a selling point if I am Texas A&M or Miami or Tennessee?
Godfrey, we've already seen it. Producer TJ, I will send it to him. UCF put out a graphic Nitro, one of the greatest mascots in college sports. He's a giant knight with no face. He's just black behind the mask, and it's just darkness. And I don't think it's darkness of the soul or anything like that.
It's a metaphor for living in Orlando.
Yeah,
exactly. So Nitro is holding a giant bag of cash, and it just says reminder: no state income tax.
Brilliant. Yeah, love it. God, you know what? As much as people want to hate on UCF in the traditionalist circles of college football, man, they will kick down any door of modernity in an effort to stay relevant, and I love them for that.
I will point out a new recruiting advantage.
Go
for
it.
The White House copied the graphic several days later.
I love it. I love it.
I believe they were advertising the no tax on tips.
Yeah. Okay.
Part of the IRS code change. And it was Donald Trump holding a giant bag of money.
I love this idea so much because the part of the country that we hail from, I can't wait until someone proposes an abolishment in a small state like, I don't know, Mississippi, of state income tax specifically so that they can become more attractive to college football players.
No, this already happened. Georgia had a bill last year.
Yeah.
Arkansas. There were multiple bills.
Arkansas had a bill passed, I believe.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Georgia, it was like, guys, what are we doing here?
There's way too much revenue in the state of Georgia for that to happen. Like, it's the way the structure, you know, I threw out Mississippi for obvious reasons, but Arkansas, I could see that one happening. I could definitely see that one happening. This is fantastic.
You want something to happen in the world?
You get college football. You get college football wins and losses on the line. It will happen.
Yeah, look at all the state NIL laws that have changed over the last 3 or 4 years just to one up the other state next door, you know? And it's just been this race sort of it's hard to move the political gears unless there's some college football behind it, especially in the South and the Midwest.
Well, and certain states you know, it's a very bipartisan thing. Like if you're in Tennessee and you do something that helps the Vols, that gets you votes.
Feels like Louisiana might be fleet of foot to help assist the football program that was designed by a governor to be the most important thing in the public side of the state. In terms of like
also Ohio, you know, if somebody happens to plant a flag on your field, you can actually make that a felony if you or at least try to.
That's right. That's all we need is more politicians in college sports, but they're asking for it. So there we are.
That'll fix it. That'll fix the problems.
But so we talked about this a little bit, Ross and I did on Tuesday. I actually do think no matter what happens going forward, I don't think they're going to get a federal law that gives them the broad sweeping antitrust exemptions they want. I think probably they're going to wind up heading toward a CBA at some point. But as Ross pointed out on Tuesday, that's not happening anytime soon. It's going to take years to hammer out. In the meantime, you can create a more orderly system of player movement and maybe stop some player movement, maybe convince some people to think real hard, or at least convince other schools to think real hard about taking somebody by signing players to multi-year deals that have very clearly defined buyout structures, just like the coaches' contracts. Mm-hmm. It makes sense. You know how it works. And it would solve a lot of this angst of, well, you can't leave now, and we're going to sue you. And there was no need for Duke to sue Darian Mensa. Duke should have had a number in the contract in the first place that said, if he wants to leave right now, it's going to cost you $4 million.
Well, and Andy, this is a good point for two reasons. One, well, I asked the some folks at Duke just over the last week, like, why didn't you guys put a number? And I think they thought that in Washington's deal was the same, by the way, right? There was no number.
But they did very quickly come with a big number.
Yeah. Basically the value of the contract, right?
Yeah.
But like, I asked them that and they said, well, we thought it would be to our advantage not to put a number because then there's not a number to get out of the deal. Kind of like,
I would be shocked if they got four million bucks.
That's naive.
I would be shocked if they got $4 million bucks in that settlement.
Yeah.
But I bet if the number on the paper had said $4 million that Miami, as desperate as they were, would have happily paid it.
That's why that was very naive on Duke's part.
That's true. I mean, so the other reason to have the number in there outside of what we just talked about is the whole reduction of buyout for the school who paid it. Now you exactly know what the buyout was because it was in the contract and that school has to take it off their cap. And I mean, if the settlement was... I'm just going to guess here. Like the settlement was in between $2 and $3 million or something like that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be two thirds of what it was. I mean, that's a pretty big number if, you know, Miami's going to have that reduced from their pool. So,
So what I've learned here today is the structure of the penalty against a buyout doesn't matter because it could be made up for an NIL in a future spending cycle. All right. Mm-hmm. There's no dollar amount that's going to dissuade a heavy spending program from tampering.
Nope.
And so nothing has changed and everything is
nothing has changed except Indiana is now the national champion and Texas Tech bought a good enough roster to win the Big 12 and make the playoff. Whereas neither of those things ever would have happened in the old system.
Well, no, I think the thing we should be focusing on is the success of those who are aggressive in this market. It seems like anyone who, the moment someone clutches their pearls, be it justifiable or not, like you have to feel for Dabo Swinney, you have to feel for Duke or whoever's on the short end of the particular stick. It just doesn't seem like, because there's no enforcement model, because I feel like we do this segment about once a week. We bump into the idea of we're never going to recognize them as labor until we absolutely have to. And until then, you can't really put... It's like putting that little fake storm fencing around the problem. We're just going to barrel through that, right? So really the only change that we can actually observe in the sport right now is those who are aggressive within the quote-unquote lawlessness of this new frontier.
Mm-hmm. It's to their advantage. Now, we'll say, I think, like, both of these sort of scenarios with DeMond in with Darian... Like the rev share sort of contracts worked. I mean, Gamon didn't leave, right? Disincentivized him to leave all the money and all the money that LSU would have had to pay and reduction on the buyout. I mean, the whole price was going to be like $13 million, right? To pay him, to pay the buyout, and then have it reduced from your cap. And then in the Darian situation, I mean, Duke got money, probably a lot of money.
So, but Ross, you're saying Duke probably left money on the table too. By and again, also, in my words, being so naive that they didn't stick a high dollar amount on the buyout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they probably did.
Yeah, yeah. I think if you put a high enough, the tricky part, and this is where I'll be sympathetic to Duke a little bit. The tricky part with any buyout is in employment law, and I realize this is also where people are like, they're not employees. It's no, it's not. No, it's not. Like, my contract with Yahoo for this show, I'm not a Yahoo employee. I'm an On3 employee.
Mm-hmm.
So Yahoo has to sign me to a 1099 deal, but it has a non-compete. Now, I had to get it rewritten so that I could do my day job, but it has a non-compete. And so you can have a non-compete in these things, but buyouts cannot be considered punitive. They need to represent actual damages. So that's, I think some of the schools are a little bit leery of putting giant numbers on those things because they worry they might not hold up in court. But I do think Duke could have made a very strong argument, especially given the timing of the Darian Mensah thing, that the amount they owe him this year would have been a perfectly reasonable damage claim.
Well, that's what I'm, and that's what I kind of want to sit with and get it down to its plainest conversational terms, because a lot of people listening are maybe not lawyers or not steeped in this. Yes, the enforceability of it is in question, but we are moving into a realm specifically with quarterbacks where we haven't set a market cap on the value of the quarterback, right? We're pulling kids from sub 500 programs and then they're winning national championships and Heismans. So the market is ginned up for that.
The Ty Simpson numbers I've been told that were reported are real.
Okay.
$6.5 million for Ty Simpson to stay in college one more year was real.
Okay. If that, and I have no reason not to believe that, then the corresponding buyout would probably, to your point, I think, Andy, if you juice the buyout up, I think that might be enforceable because of the total value of the contract. You can't sign a kid to a $4 million deal with a $20 million buyout.
Well, like Kurt Cignetti's contract, I used this as an example in my column the other day. Kurt Cignetti's original contract at Indiana, if he'd have left in the first year of the deal, he would have owed more than his salary in buyout.
Mm-hmm.
So it's reasonable.
But he's an employee.
I think it's reasonable.
One of the questions, probably...
he's a person you're paying to do something.
Fantastic.
For those listeners who only care or mainly care about, hey, we just want to know, and we wanted to know months ago, and now do we know if rev share contracts limit player movement? In some cases, like DeMond, they do. In other cases, like Darian, they don't. So there's really, I mean, that's sort of like, to dumb it down, right? And Godfrey always brings this up. Let's simplify the argument. And we saw these two cases. Now, those are the public cases. There are plenty of private things that happen. Mm-hmm. In fact, after my story this morning, I got a call from an AD at a very big basketball school who said that one of their players had signed an agreement this year. And then like 2 days later, right, got courted and told the coach that he was going to enter the portal, and the coach said, no, you know, no, you're not. You just signed this agreement, and the player brought in, sort of like Darin Heitner, the lawyer out of Florida, was brought in with the DeMond situation, and you know, he stayed. It happened at this school, right? The player stayed because he had just signed. I think that happened at a lot of places. So I think if you sign a multi-year deal, or if you just signed a new deal, it has limited movement. I think it has. I don't know how much. It's hard to tell. But I think in general, it has limited player movement. But the thing about the Mensah situation, I think a lot of people around were pressuring Duke to continue, not to settle, to continue with the lawsuit, to set some kind of precedent in court. Problem is, it could have set the opposite precedent if won.
There's a reason Duke settled as quickly as they did. They were in danger of losing.
And if that would have happened, that was precedent set, and that they would have gotten zero money.
Do you guys remember the Todd Graham situation like 15 years ago now, or however many years ago that was, where Todd Graham was a head coach? He went from, I believe it was from Tulsa to Pittsburgh to Arizona State in successive years. And it was the first time we had really seen that back in the Power Five days. And it's so funny to me because it was kind of shrugged off at the time. And every time that Todd Graham would take a new job, he'd be like, he'd either say, this is my dream job, or I have family here. And that became a bit when I worked at SB Nation. We would say, like, anytime a job opened, we would say, oh, Todd Graham's got family in X. The other one that we'd always joke about is Troy Calhoun is interested, but that's a bit we can talk about another time. Make Andy laugh there. This is, it's funny because we saw flare-ups of this in the 2010s with coaches when we got really aggressive in the carousel market. That is essentially what's happening to the top 20% of personnel, which is mainly quarterbacks and sort of high-value skill position players. There's no way to enforce it. The market has to somehow regulate itself, and I don't know if that's going to happen in the next couple of years.
Well, and the thing is, we could talk about how the contracts are, and I think they are. I think they're limiting movement more than people realize. But as Matt Rhule said last year, the most desperate school sets the market.
Yeah.
Miami was desperate to get a quarterback.
Yeah.
They were going to get a quarterback. They were going
combing
to pay
the market.
A lot of money.
They were combing the market.
So,
yeah.
So I don't think it would have mattered. They were going to get their quarterback somehow.
Yeah. Which is funny because it goes back to Dabo, because you look at a person like Pete Golding, who was maybe we're learning more of, had more hands on, more controls at Ole Miss than we thought under the Lane Kiffin regime, and has sort of built a philosophy of roster management, if you will, with a cutthroat approach. Let's say Ole Miss is successful next year without Lane Kiffin, to whatever degree you define success, maybe on the playoff doorstep or just outside of it, right? This philosophy, as we know about football, especially in college, will be emulated over and over again. So the idea of like pushing against contractual rules or the tampering that Dabo alleged, as long as this susses out with more wins than losses, you're going to see more staffs try to emulate that. Because Andy, nothing, you talk about the most desperate team. I'm not saying LSU was desperate this year because they felt like they had were in a total system failure under Kelly. If they see it like Lane is the perfect example of a cutthroat sort of swashbuckling attitude towards all of this. If LSU makes the playoff or goes further than that, like more programs are going to emulate contract breaking than they are going to abide by it.
Agreed. And look, the market's going to have to settle itself a little bit.
Yeah.
But we're going to watch it evolve. But I do think it'll get more like the coaching market, which is not regulated by a federal law, not regulated by a CBA. It is regulated by CAA.
Yeah, it is.
Not a CBA. So, but
yeah, I didn't do that one. That wasn't me. That was Andy.
That was me. Sorry. Well, and Athletes First and Balch.
Shout out to all of our guys listening. Yeah.
WME.
Yeah.
Sorry. So, but we have another coaching conversation that Mr. Godfrey brought up in our group chat that I find utterly fascinating. Some of the names that we saw bubble through college football, now NFL head coaches. Is there a brain drain? Because college football coaching is a giant pain in the ass. We'll talk about it next. College Football Inquirer. We were talking buyouts, players versus coaches. Now let's just talk coaches, because Godfrey, you sent us a really interesting note in our group chat, and it was based on a conversation you had with somebody at the coaches convention in Charlotte. And so can you just
I'll paint a picture.
Tell us what they said.
This is where I excel. If you've ever been to the Charlotte Convention Center, which is often where they host the AFCA convention, which is basically about usually 4,000 college football coaches all in a quarter zip alternating between, well, they've always got a Zen in, they got a cup of coffee, about 3 o'clock, they switch to a Miller Lite or domestic of choice, classic Dan Wetzel. And essentially they either gossip like a little junior high lunch table, or they try and get a job somewhere else, or a little bit of both. But anyways, people like us go and we just kind of work the floor and shake hands and catch up. And unprovoked, unsolicited, a friend of mine in the coaching world, I met him in the middle of the convention center. There's a little like pagoda. That's a shopping mall vocab word with a Starbucks. Mm-hmm. And everybody kind of gathers around there and they, oh, hey, man, what's going on? Everybody, you know, that thing where you try and shake your hand off like it's just a death grip of like, this is my manhood. Right. A lot of that.
Let you paint the picture.
What's going on, brother? Yes. Oh, hey. Like that kind of like guttural thing.
Little Ed Orgeron going on there. Is that Ed Orgeron coming out?
A little bit. Sure. Yeah. As an aside, Ross, every time I talk to him now.
Every offensive line GA ever.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Every time I talk to Ed, you know, because he threatened to kill me when I was a beat writer. Mm-hmm. That's a true story. We'll tell another time.
Yeah.
But he goes, Godfrey, how you boys? And what's funny is I have a daughter, but he goes, how you boys? He goes, nice. And he goes into a whole thing about sons and fatherhood. Like, I think he should write self-help books. You've now got me completely off track. All right. Okay. Sorry. And I would buy. No, I legitimately think Ed Orgeron. Okay. Anyway.
I want to be releasing that book on tape, too.
Chapter four.
As long as he reads it shirtless and we're sitting outside, like somewhere in South Beach, man, we have killed this bit. All right. So one of my guys I walk up to, and he just says, he goes, look around. He just goes, look around, kind of gives the finger, the circular finger wave. He goes, everybody here looks like, and then he said a word that I will say is crap, but he didn't say that word because we don't want our producer TJ to have to edit anything out. Everybody here looks like crap. And we started talking about just side by side, the comparison. And I want to be really clear here. We're about to discuss the quality of life for college football coaches. And a lot of you who aren't in the business are going to go, man, what do I care? That guy's making $6 million, $10 million, $12 million. We're not talking about those people. That is the 1% of the coaching profession. Okay, guys? We are talking about the linebackers coach at an FCS program. We are talking about the 27th guy on the back row of the team photo for the University of Florida. We are talking about all of the rank and file individuals who get fired, who get tossed aside, who are basically working, Andy, 8-9 days a week, if that's physically possible. Yeah. So that's kind of how I want to set the table. Now, what's going on that prompted my sort of submission to y'all is that we're seeing guys who have either vocally, like in public, or privately to people like us, just said, I can't do this anymore. This is miserable. I'm going to shift and go to the NFL if I can. And now we're seeing those guys kind of pay off. So I think the obvious place to start, Andy, is like, let's talk about Jeff Hafley for a second.
Yes.
Because he was the most
public. We talk about a lot of people because the current NFL hiring carousel is loaded with names we remember from very recent college football. So Todd Monken, former Georgia offensive coordinator, just got the Browns head coaching job. Jeff Hafley, who left the Boston College head coaching job to become the Green Bay Packers defensive coordinator, is the new coach of the Miami Dolphins. Jesse Minter, who had a show cause for sending texts when he wasn't supposed to a recruit.
Whoops.
About a visit that the recruit was going on. Logistical stuff. He's the new Baltimore Ravens head coach. He was the DC at Michigan 3 years ago.
We played remember some guys in our text about like
when hold on. The DC at Michigan before Jesse Minter was Mike McDonald. He is about to coach the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl.
Probably going to win a Super Bowl. So what's feeding this? What happened to like life on campus? What happened to it's very simple. You know all these segments we do about how jacked up the schedule is and the cycle? These guys are literally working themselves into medical issues. These guys are literally working themselves into kind of a miserable life. And again, I really want to emphasize this. We're not talking about the guys who are making the 6, 10, 20 million, whatever at the top. We're talking about the rank and file guys who basically break and figure out, hey, if I go to the NFL, I'm going to give you a personal anecdote here, Andy. I live in Nashville. This now previous Tennessee Titans coaching staff, we have at our school over the years, we'll have a Titans assistant coach come in and their kids will enroll at the school. And I turned around at a fundraiser last fall. It was a Friday night in October, Andy. And I saw the guy. He was there at 8:30 on a Friday night. They had a home game on Sunday. And I was blown away. I've only ever covered college. I've never covered the NFL. And I asked some people, some friends of mine who work in the league, I said, is this like normal? And he said, yeah, all the time. You work your ass off in the NFL. Don't get it twisted, for sure. But there are also very clear parameters of what you don't have to do and when you don't have to do it. And that's what's missing from college football.
Yeah. And that's something that I think college football, they're really coming around on that. Because it was the coaches. I can't stress this enough because the coach is the ones complaining about it now. But it was the coaches, for the most part, who shot down the idea of a spring transfer portal last year.
Yes.
They were the ones who wanted their team together by January. So they had their team together before spring practice. They had their team together for offseason conditioning. And most of the Big Ten coaches wanted the spring portal. But again, all politics are local. Most of the Big Ten coaches also wanted to be bringing portal prospects to campus when the weather's nice and not when it's super cold. So the rest of the coaches in the rest of the country are now coming around on that idea because, like you said at the convention, everybody looking like crap. The portal was open at that point.
Yes.
Everybody was dying because they're still dealing with high school recruiting. They're dealing with the portal. They just came off a season, or in some cases, they are still coaching because they're in the playoff. Yeah, the NFL is a much better deal.
It's ball
right now for them.
Yeah, I asked some coaches about this just over DM, those who have worked on both sides of it. And the simplest explanation is it's just ball. And what I mean by that is, so you remember when Urban Meyer got in trouble, he goes to the Columbus bar when he was the head coach of the Jags.
Yep, yep, yep.
That was a big finger wag culturally from the
NFL. He just didn't have enough to do. Like, he should have, he normally after a Thursday night game, you are cruding.
Well, yes, and it's also maybe what he was doing in the bar. In the NFL, there's sort of, it's a single focus, and it occupies the amount of time that you are in the building or working, and it is ball. And what I mean by that is you're going to win or lose. You're not going to win every game in the NFL, and your season's certainly not over. But the moment it's over, you get on the plane. If it's a road game, you start watching tape, and you continue to watch tape, and you're installing the game plan for the following week, and you're talking to your, you know, your unit, if you're a position coach, et cetera, et cetera. You're not making recruiting calls. Andy, you could be one of the best O-line coaches in the NFL. You're never going to have to worry about personnel other than, is the GM going to draft a good offensive lineman for me, or are we going to sign one?
Right. Now, I think Howie Roseman probably does ask Jeff Stoutman his opinion Definitely. On offensive line prospects.
But he doesn't ask him to make phone calls. He doesn't ask him at 10:30 on a Tuesday night, hey, can you call this free agent linebacker? And can we, like, there are recruitment pitches during free agency, but guess what? That's not happening literally during the season either. So the life is just simpler. I'm not saying it's not. It's definitely pressure filled. It's definitely stressful. It's the NFL, right? It stands for not for long. All of those things are true. But on the day-to-day beats of it, I have continually had people, and this is where we can take it back to some of these guys, say, I'd rather be in the NFL. There's also a level of anonymity, Andy. If you are, I'm going to throw one out here randomly. If you are an assistant coach for the Carolina Panthers, you can go to the grocery store. You can go about your life. You can just lead a basically anonymous existence. If you are living in Athens, Georgia, or Lincoln, Nebraska, I just would pull one out, Eugene, Oregon.
Gainesville, Florida, where I live. Yeah,
you are a celebrity, whether you like it or not. Yeah. That's another aspect of this.
No, so there was a coach who was at Florida a few years ago, and our kids went to the same school, and had to hang out with him at the daddy daughter dance and everything, and he ended up going to the NFL. And I saw him at the combine a few years ago, and I said, "You ever think about going back to college?" And he goes, "Hell no."
Yeah.
Hell no.
It is worth mentioning that one of the talking points, I hope it's more than a talking point, that came from our current national championship program, Indiana, was that we want to get everybody out of the building. Mm-hmm. So Kurt Cignetti talked a lot about, I don't want guys up here, well past midnight. I don't want guys up here living in the building. I want them to see their families. This is not new, by the way. Like Steve Spurrier, for instance, was very famous about, hey, we're going to get out of here. Steve was going to get his 18 in, even in the season. Mm-hmm. But also, you are going to try.
No.
Not in the season?
Not in the season.
Not in the season. Okay.
Come on, guys.
Right. Hey.
But it's at,
if it works, it works, baby.
During spring practice?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
This is it's not an entirely new concept, but I think we may have discussed this off the air, Andy. The idea of Cignetti winning a national championship, undefeated, et cetera, and espousing what something one might consider an actual work-life balance, that feels like heresy compared to the Saban era.
Question, because I always thought the biggest threat previously to work-life balance for college coaches was the recruiting aspect of it, the high school recruiting aspect
of
it.
Yeah.
Can you dial that back now? I don't know that you have to be as insane about that, because one, the money in your GM are going to do some work for you.
Right.
Two, you don't need that many guys. You don't need to sign that many guys out of high school.
Right.
And you're probably not competing as fiercely for, at least when you're at those top end schools,
mm-hmm.
as many of the same top end guys, because the money's going to separate them out. You're just not going to be able to pay as many of, like, the Alabama classes and the Georgia classes and the Ohio State classes that we got used to seeing
mm-hmm.
in the teens. It's just not going to happen anymore. You can't.
I think what you're describing is correct. I also think it only applies to the haves, with so maybe 30 odd programs right now, because
right.
the fatigue that we're seeing is at that lower tier ACC or Big 12 school, and then all the way down through thousands mm-hmm. of coaches, because ideally what you're proposing is we're going to create personnel staff that didn't exist previously, GMs, people who manage a cap, and they're going to deal
with
that.
The haves always had personnel staffs too, but it all that was is to make the work more efficient right. for the other people, but they still had to do it.
Yeah, so this hypothetical O-line coach still has to go out and make all those calls. You would think maybe with the way that we're talking about like contracts in the previous segment, newly created staffers are going to handle all that. Yes, that's true. I think the fatigue that we're hearing about, and to go back to someone like, so Jeff Hafley basically leaves Boston College. I can't remember how many seasons ago it was. It was fairly recent.
It was about, yeah, it was three years ago.
And says, this isn't working. We can't do this. And this was really before we got into the true headhunter era of NIL and what we're dealing with
now. But I think Jeff knew where it was going. I think he understood where it was going. And he's like, I'm content to take a coordinator job.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he had to take a pay cut to take the coordinator job. But he also knew he's a good coach. And if you succeed as a coordinator in the NFL, especially in a good franchise like the Packers, we're going to be in the playoffs a lot. Then you become a head coach. And sure enough, he is now the Dolphins head coach.
So here's the problem with that. It's hard to replicate because there's 32 head coaching jobs in the NFL.
Yeah. Right?
There are 136 in the FBS level. And then on down with your assistants, et cetera. So,
well, I'll give you another example of this. So there was a position coach with the Washington team in 2023 that made it to the national title game. Their offensive line coach was very good. And he was initially going to go with Kalen DeBoer to Alabama. But then when Ryan Grubb got the Seahawks OC job, Huff went with Ryan Grubb to the Seahawks. Grubb gets fired. Grubb goes back to Alabama. Huff's like, I like the NFL. He goes to the Chargers. He's a Rams tight ends coach now. So, which, by the way, the Rams run 13 personnel all the time. The tight end coach at the Rams is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, definitely. Not to mention the career rub you get right now working on a Sean McVay staff.
Yeah. So right now, you know, Scott Huff is in the NFL, happy in the NFL. Like, that would have been Kalen DeBoer's call.
Yeah.
Like, if Scott Huff's with Kalen DeBoer, we might be talking about Alabama making it to the semifinals or making it to the national title game. Instead, we're talking about Alabama couldn't run the ball.
So the one that,
and what are they going to do next year?
The one that kind of jogged all this for me was our Yahoo colleague, Nate Tice, was talking about the Chargers staff that Harbaugh is currently assembling. So, like, it's Mike McDaniel, the old Dolphins head coach, is going to be the OC, which, by the way, he is considered to be sort of a savant level play caller, regardless of what happened in Miami. And then I don't know if this has happened yet, but Jim Leonard is interviewing to DC there. And it jogged my memory because I'm an NFL fan, but I cover college. And so I don't know if you guys experience this. When the guys go to the pros, like, you know, you kind of lose them in the wash for a couple of years. And I was like, oh, Jim Leonard. This guy was the interim head coach for the Wisconsin Badgers when they made that sort of seismic decision. We're no longer going to keep that Barry Alvarez status quo. We want to go out. We want to compete at the very top of the Big Ten. Now, ultimately, they make the move. Leonard is the interim. I think he was DC at the time. He's the interim head coach. And a lot of people at the time thought it was between him and maybe like Lance Leipold, who had sort of Kansas red hot at the time, Andy. And he didn't get the job. He was a UW, I believe he was an alumnus at UW. He played there. I think he's from the state of Wisconsin. It felt like
Jim Leonard was Mr. Wisconsin. Yes.
It felt like this was a birthright job for him to take over the Badgers. Now, obviously, they went with Luke Fickell, who's amazing run at Cincinnati. fast forward a couple years, and this is what inspired this entire suggestion to y'all. I think Jim Leonard kind of was blessed by the omission, by getting turned down for this gig. He's about to be a DC for a team. Look, a good NFL team with a quarterback is basically a recipe to become a head coach somewhere, mm-hmm. wherever you want, right?
Right, because you're going to be successful, and then you're like, oh, what coordinator can we pluck from this team?
Exactly, like talking about Mike McDonald or talking about any of the guys who are in this situation right,
Mike
now.
McDonald was the Ravens defensive coordinator before he became the Seahawks head coach. Like,
yeah.
The Ravens were always good. They were always deep in the playoffs. And okay, how's that happening?
So now it's a combination of things, Andy. It's one, he might catch on in LA. I think LA is going to be good for a couple years because they've got a quarterback. They know what they're doing. That's basically the only thing that we can suss out when we talk about NFL futures. Combined with what's happened at Wisconsin, combined with Wisconsin being totally flat-footed on NIL, combined mm-hmm. with someone, the freaking most sports writer endorsed hire of the last 5 years was Luke Fickell to Wisconsin. And it's a bust so far. Now, I'm not saying it's done, but it's a bust so far. And I think about quality of life. And surely Jim Leonard right now has got to be thankful that he didn't get his dream job.
It's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. But I do think, to Ross's point earlier, if they get the schedule straight, if they move the portal to spring, if they move spring practice into some OTA situation over the summer, they can probably create a little bit better quality of life for the coaches, probably a little more organized and structured calendar. I would say the other probably necessary move is eliminate the early high school signing day and just go back to the old first Wednesday in February situation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, want bring guys back to real early. Signing day. Yes.
Yes.
Be a good TV product for no other reason.
I want three and Rivals,
and the
baby.
Over.
I want that more than anybody.
we've got enough crap to cover in early mid December. There's enough stuff going on. Give us something in February, man.
Hey,
like, that was always
I'm gonna say this to our producer on the air, TJ. So I keep a notepad when we do shows, mainly to not get distracted. I could write out right now. You're talking about like for our benefit in the media. 6 good TV days that we could create in college football by reworking the schedule a little bit. And what I mean by TV day is, do you guys remember that handful of years where ESPNU, it was like right about the time the conference networks came on,
Tom Luganville became a star,
buddy,
baby.
Those were legit like TV ratings days for ESPN. When you had, you could create that for signing day. You could create that for the portal. I could sit here and write them out. Hey, schedule announcements. Like the schedule reveal ratings for the NFL network were ridiculous for a couple of years. Like, we can build really nice tentpole media events in the college football offseason if we can rework this schedule a little bit. Like, I could give you more. That's another part.
So this is one of those that would help him in a lot of ways, because it would help the coaches manage their own calendars. It would probably help the players in terms of their academic progress, which, God forbid, we think about that. But yeah, college football is a commodity. It's a product. It's an entertainment product. And you do want it to be top of mind. And so you don't want it to disappear from the calendar. This would allow it to be more prevalent and across the calendar, which is something the NFL is really good at.
Yeah,
Major League Baseball is really bad at it. Like, different leagues are different when it comes to that. I'd say the NFL and the NBA probably are the best at that. So
we need a winter meetings.
Well, we have spring meetings.
We have spring meetings.
I'm saying the MLB version, like, you know, you're talking about the MLB winter meetings.
Oh,
yeah.
Taking that and sort of compressing it. I know, Ross, you hit up those places, like you go to Destin. And then is that weird golf tournament thing? Is that still a thing in Arizona where like it's like the Big 12 or Pac-12?
Not really. They're trying to keep it alive. Yeah. I mean, it used to be, the Fiesta, way back in the day, it was a Fiesta Frolic. Then it became the Fiesta Summit when trouble brewed.
Shout out to John Drucker.
They changed it from Frolic to Summit. But now, you know, a lot of the conference meetings aren't there any longer. So it's sort of fizzling out, which is unfortunate, because it's usually like the best sort of, backslapping, hand wringling, whatever.
Okay. What about this one, Ross?
On the off season.
What about this one? All of the, man, it's going to be hard not to swear, all of the absolute BS that comes from the College Football Playoff Committee and the constant reworking of it and the constant tampering and all the BCS nonsense. What if we put that at like a weekend in February And then you guys, like the hardcore actual news media of college football, it's a little bit like a Pope election. So like they go to a hotel and then we get white smoke at the end. And then somebody comes out and they're like
14 teams.
And then everyone's whatever. Okay. Yeah. And then you guys report off that. That could be a media event, right? By the way,
that's true.
11 that's of true. Them will be from the SEC. Yeah. And then like you just see Sankey with like a little Derringer in his back. Like I'm telling you, we could that's an easy TV event. We could do that.
Yeah. Yeah, true. No, I like it. I like these ideas. TJ, our producer, is messaging and asking if the college football calendar changes could come this, like, or, you know, next year. Unlikely. They don't do anything quickly, but they are trying to make strides this offseason on doing it as fast as possible and shifting around the season a little bit more. But we'll, you know, we'll see. I mean, there's a few big things that you guys might have talked about while I dipped out for a minute was, the early signing day, transfer portal, and sort of the, as to Godfrey's point about like everybody looks like crap in the room, the recruiting days and the dead periods and all that stuff, trying to insert maybe more dead periods into just the calendar year because so many players are visiting campuses now. Right. It's so much easier to travel to campuses and you're getting paid to travel to campuses. Like the coach doesn't necessarily need to see you any longer. So all that's got to change.
If their GM can send your agent an offer sheet at any time, what do we really need here?
Also,
how many classroom tours do we really need to have?
Coaches, hydrate, moisturize. Okay. Skincare is non-negotiable. You're going to hit your mid-30s, hydrate. Moisturize. You need a skincare regimen, talk to me. There's some very affordable Korean brands. They do wonders, okay? I'm actually 62 years old, all right?
Speaking of people in their 60s, there's a very famous college football coach who used to work in the NFL. Speaking of...
He's in his 70s, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. 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 That's right. His girlfriend's in her 20s. Right. Okay.
It's a hell of a try with a segue, though.
He didn't make the Hall of Fame. We got to talk about that when we come back. We're back at the College Football Inquirer, and of course, the big news across football in general this week, not just college football, but this person is a college football coach. Bill Belichick did not make the NFL Hall of Fame, or the Pro Football Hall of Fame, excuse me, on the first ballot. And I don't know. This is my opinion only. I'm not speaking for Ross or Godfrey here. It's incredibly stupid that he didn't make the Hall of Fame. It's Bill Belichick. He won 6 Super Bowls, and he won 2 as a defensive coordinator. I mean, like, it's an unassailable case for the Hall of Fame. I don't care how you feel about Spygate. Don't care. Unassailable. He didn't make it. Maybe because the voting system's a little fakakta. I don't know.
Let's talk about that. What's the voting system? I want to know what the voting system is.
They didn't just change this.
It's the sports writers, because we always...
It is some sports writers. It's some former people who worked in the industry. So there's 50 electors. You have to get 40 votes. But in this particular situation, they've changed the categories now. It's players are in a different category. These are contributors now. So their coaches are lumped in. Owners are lumped in. But also there's veteran, like former players who have passed through the player ballot system and now are on this veterans list. So like Roger Craig, the former 49ers running back, who is a really, really good player in the 80s.
Tecmo Bowl legend.
And so he was on this same list of finalists with Bill Belichick. So was Robert Kraft, by the way, the Patriots owner, which needless to say, there's a little bit of friction between him and Bill Belichick. But sure. So basically, you're allowed to vote for 3 of the 5, and whoever gets 40 or more votes is in the Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Bill Belichick did not get 40 votes.
This is hilarious.
So at least 11 people didn't vote for him.
At least 11 people, one of which we know, and one we know voted for him. Yeah. So everyone thought Bill Polian had mounted a smear campaign. Bill Polian, the former Colts GM, had mounted a smear campaign.
Which is awesome.
to keep him out, Bill Polian was a voter and did vote for Belichick. The Hall of Fame has confirmed that. We know one who didn't because he wrote a column about it. And I don't know if you guys know this guy. I've known him for a while. He's a great guy.
I know him very
guy.
Well. Yeah.
Vahe Gregorian of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Longtime columnist there. Really good guy. Respected reporter. He wrote a column because he voted for the three guys who weren't Bill Belichick or Bob Kraft. And his reasoning was he thought they might never come back on the ballot and he wanted them to have their chance to get in the Hall of Fame because they might not. So it was Belichick, Robert Kraft, Ken Anderson, Roger Craig, and L.C. Greenwood. So Gregorian voted for Ken Anderson, Roger Craig, and L.C. Greenwood. And in his column, though, like explaining it, you can tell as he was writing the column, he's like, I messed this up. I messed this up. Because obviously Bill Belichick should get in. My question, because this is the first thing about that,
right? How many, he probably didn't expect many people to do
it. At least 11. Right. Yeah. 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 He's like, everybody else is going to vote for him. So I'm going to be a little different.
Right.
But when you have a bunch of the same kind of person, it might have been a bunch of the same idea. But my initial thought when the news came out on Tuesday night, because at first I thought it was a prank.
Mm-hmm.
So I was waiting for more confirmation. And then Wednesday morning, there's enough confirmation. Like, he's not getting in. I was like, did a year of watching him, one, fail.
Piss all over his legacy?
Yeah. Two, be a reality TV star, whether willing or unwilling. Did that cause these guys to not take Bill Belichick seriously enough to go, of course Bill Belichick should be in the Hall of Fame?
Unwilling? What, does she have Steve with a gun to his head off camera on all those stupid ass beach shots? Hey, unwilling? He's willing, all right.
There's something to his head. But
yeah. Something's undefeated historically. This is the funniest thing that could possibly happen. I think it's great. I don't care. I need to start off by saying, like, I don't care. And I don't vote for the Heisman. I don't vote for anything. This isn't a hipster stance.
I love how Godfrey is so respectful of college football.
Yeah.
That, like, you're enjoying this.
Oh, God,
because
it's so
Bill
great.
Belichick did not respect the game enough.
Maybe that's
when
part
he
of
got
it.
Here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of people have been like, oh, it's because you don't like Bill Belichick, because it really has nothing to do with that. Because Andy made a good point during the break. Being an a-hole should not preclude you from this kind of honorarium, because I'm a person who, you know what makes me the angriest is when I'm looking something up for our jobs and some noble-headed Boy Scout on Wikipedia has taken off the win-loss columns of like a coach or program because the NCAA vacated it. I have gone on Twitter multiple times and been like, if I find you, I will hurt you, because I'll be in the middle of writing something. I'll look something up. I'll be like, what do you mean they went 0-1 that season?
You're like, I need to know Bobby Bowden's actual career record.
Boy Scout? Like, so yeah. I can't talk out of both sides of my mouth. I don't care about Spygate. I do think he cheated, but I also don't care. I don't care about the Astros thing. I don't care about any of that stuff. I think it's all part of the game. I never cared about Harbaugh. That's part of the game. My only thing was, hey, Michigan should not do the holier than thou bit, because the only way they got a national title was by running a cheating program like everybody else did down south.
They don't anymore, bet. So you don't have to worry about that.
I like, put them in your Hall of Fame. Don't. The only thing that I could probably comment on in the last 48 hours is how many sports writers are like really like feeling like
really
taking
mad.
Up arms on behalf of Bill
mad.
Belichick.
Mad.
Hey, our job is not to create fake little yearbooks of this was the best person because we voted. Should he be in there objectively? Of course, he won like 90 Super Bowls. But our job is the mess. And this is such a great mess. And this is fantastic.
But now, we're not supposed to create the mess.
We didn't create it, though, because you said we partially created it.
That's the three of us.
A few of us did. But hey, guess what? Isn't there a sports writer on the CFB selection committee? That's a freaking mess every year.
Retired sports writer. So my co-host Ari at On Three, he actually asked when we were staking out, Ross, you were there, when we were staking out the meeting in Miami Beach, he was asking how he gets on the committee, and he was told you have to quit your job. And I was like, I was like, no. And for, I would never want to do that.
If Ohio State could be a one seed every year, Ari would do it.
Yeah, it's nice. The committee's not going to exist when we get to retirement age, by the way. I'm sure the committee won't exist.
You could not. They don't pay you anything to be on that committee. You could not pay me enough to be on the college football playoff selection
board. I would rather slam my manhood in a car door than volunteer to work on that committee. Have you absolutely not?
Just doing the mock thing that we do. I don't know if y'all we talked about it before.
Yeah,
I don't
know.
You've done it. Yeah. I mean the mock thing, like walking out. I remember walking out of there like, man, this is dumb. Like I would never want to do that in real life. Like, this is stupid. We are looking at, like, what somebody's average strength of record is by a percentage points from somebody else. It's all stupid.
I'm going to try and get this back to college. The way we got this in the show today was asking, has his wonderful, no comment necessary, 10 out of 10 tenure so far at UNC caused maybe a little tarnish? That is for the people who vote for this silly Hall of Fame to decide, I guess. And I don't know if they'll ever cop to it. Andy,
Belichick was not a person we laughed at before. And he's been a person that we laugh at for the last year.
I mean, he's become a sort of slapstick punchline. And he was one of the most emotionless people I'd ever seen in the sport. I can't overemphasize the transition of his public image. And that's what people, I think, and I get that the NFL holds him in a way that we in college don't. And maybe, Andy, you are speaking to something that's buried beneath my surface of like, they came in and it was mainly Mike Lombardi. Let's be honest. It was mainly Mike Lombardi when they got hired at North Carolina, who said, we're going to be the 33rd NFL team. It was very similar to when Charlie Weiss was hired in Notre Dame and telling everyone we're going to have a decided schematic
advantage.
Yeah.
Yep.
I know, and I'm sure Ross, like I'm sure everyone you talk to kind of agreed. Like every coach I talked to was just like, "F this!" Like, are you kidding me? You guys are walking into a situation.
You can't say that, and then you end up going toe to toe with G5 schools for players in the portal. Like,
it
tells us you don't know what you're doing.
It's very,
and that's
clear.
What most of the coaching community thought. I think to Godfrey's point is like a big fat eye roll at a lot of this.
They were right. We were all right. And thus far, I keep little trackers on stuff as, you know, I'm a big person about, like, I like to promote the idea of, like, we have to wait and establish context over X amount of time because that's the way to actually intelligently, you know, evaluate something. But we all host 10 shows a week and we got to talk about something. So you remember, like, hey, who won, Brian Kelly or Notre Dame? Notre Dame won. Done. Right. We got that one. It takes years to figure this out. Right. You know, who won, Oregon or Miami? TBD. Maybe both. Keeping a tracker on UNC is something I want to do. And maybe they come on next season and prove me wrong. Like, Andy, maybe one of your colleagues
Bobby Petrino might solve it all.
Right? Okay. But it seems like this is going to go down as one of the worst and most laughable and most parodied moves in college football history. Ross, what's the guy's name? He's retiring from the UNC board that basically pushed this through.
Oh, I can't. John Pryor.
John Pryor had one of the best quotes I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Where he's basically copped to the fact that they got sold magic beans. And he's like, I don't know what, I don't have it like in front of me right now, but I read it. I genuinely laughed out loud. He said, like, he's stepping down. And he's like, hey, look, we thought hiring the greatest NFL coach in history was going to work. And if not, if, you know, sorry, we tried. Screw you, was basically what he said in public to the public. This was a quote in the newspaper. Guys, Andy, if Florida wins, like wins, if Florida goes to the college football playoff, which is the kind of the new metric that we have,
right?
If the young man, I think I'm older than him, who is taking over Florida football, who was sitting and waiting to be the next head coach at UNC, right?
Right. John Summerall, who was approached.
Yes.
And if
Florida is like a 10 or 11 win program by the end of 26 or 27, and it looks like to us that UNC is going to just kind of wash out, this is going to be one of the most disastrous hires in the history of the sport.
Yes.
So I got the quote, Godfrey, the exact quote.
Oh boy. Here it is.
To you. If I'm wrong, I mean, what the hell? If I'm wrong, screw you all. I screw mean, you all. I tried.
Yeah.
John Dreyer.
Put that on my freaking tombstone.
It's, it's so indicative of like just a board member, the culture across college sports of board members of, they think this is who they are. They're big business, big businessmen, big boosters who have a lot of power, even though they really, in a lot of ways, haven't necessarily earned it. And it's one of the essential issues going on in the sport is that they are moving the gears behind the scenes.
But they've never even read the, they're moving the gears, Ross, but they've never read the instruction manual. They're not engineers.
Yeah.
I really want to leave everyone with this. And like, it's an opinion technically, but I think my two co-hosts will corroborate. It wasn't considered a slam dunk by anyone in college football. When UNC was bull rushing Belichick through as the hire, everyone I know, every agent, rival agent, sympathetic agent, every coach, every person in the industry said, I don't know if that's going to work, guys. It was never considered a slam dunk, except for the people in that tiny, tiny circle of blue-blooded UNC folks who thought that they were smarter than everyone else in the room. They weren't.
If I'm wrong, I mean, what the hell?
Screw you.
If I'm wrong,
screw you all.
Screw you all. I mean, screw you all.
Who says that? What the hell is going on?
That God. I want that to be my epitaph.
I think North Carolina football. I think North Carolina football had they're cursed, but it's a man-made curse. Like this is how many times, Andy? When I got into college,
it's a sleeping giant, Godfrey.
That's where I was going.
I'm glad you used the Magic Beans reference because what happened when Jack planted the magic beans, he climbed to the beanstalk and found a sleeping giant.
For my entire career, going back to like being a 19-year-old student reporter, people would talk about North Carolina football and they'd be like, well, you're well positioned. You got a good school. You got the Jordan brand. It's a sleeping giant. I have heard that for longer than I want to admit that I've been alive. And it's you can't wake that giant up. You can't do it.
Well, and it's gotten the last few years because of conference realignment. Right, it's gotten more and more. You hear it more and more. Well, the SEC and the Big Ten, that the most valuable brand out there that they want is North Carolina. And that may be true because that's coming from SEC and Big Ten people, but it is weird. It's like, I don't know. There's this like mythical thing around the University of North Carolina.
We're going to leave everybody with this.
Okay.
North Carolina fired a coach who was in the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. And hired a coach who's not in any Hall of Fame.
Ooh. Bada boom.
We'll talk to you Tuesday, everybody.